Are you ready to learn? Because my super experienced guests are ready to share some really valuable information. Make sure and listen all the way to the end to get help and support. So let's start with the best audio experience.
Hello, good people! Welcome to our show! Bad people, welcome to our show! Anyone who wanna learn more about content marketing, welcome. Today we are going to discuss about many things that you can do in content marketing, especially today when we have AI and many other things. It's competitive and we need to find the way how to do it right. I'm so excited to discuss this topic with Tim Henson. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. I like how you welcome all the people, regardless of whether they're good or bad.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, in marketing, we usually create a buying persona and what we can analyze: behavior, interest, demographics, many other things, but we never divide bad or good people. Because if you ask anyone know about that, I don't know anyone who can tell that they are bad people, you know. Yeah, because we think we are good people, but probably some freak can think another way. I don't know.
I'm sure there's a couple of purchase habits that would put you on one side or the other, you know.
Okay, I hope anyone is a good person.
only good people here.
Of course. Tim, before we start, just tell more about yourself, experience, background, and anything that can help our listeners to learn more about you.
Yeah, okay, cool. Hi, I'm Tim. Hello, everyone. All the good people. I have been running my own business for 3 years, 530. Before that, I was head of SEO for a big growth agency. We did PPC, SEO, social, all those kind of things for software companies in London. And then before that, I ran my own kind of like little agency for 3 or 4 years in my free time, spare time. At the moment, I help content strategy for content teams in SaaS companies, software companies, going as a critical strategic advisor, consultant, whatever they need, give them access to all of the systems that I've built over the last nearly 10 years at this point. It's gone quick. Feels like, holy shit, like, where's that? Like, where have those 10 years gone? But no, I love it. And I mean, yeah, if you want to find me, I'm on LinkedIn at this point. Like, I'm on LinkedIn a lot, and I don't want to admit how often I'm on LinkedIn at this point.
Nice. Yeah, you're active. Yeah, I check out your profile. I love your content. And Tim, let's start with the basic. Can you tell how to create a content plan or strategy? Because what I usually see when most companies create generic strategies, they usually replicate competitors, but competitors might have another strong side, different unique selling proposition. Even if you sell similar products, yeah, your customer might be different. So we need to consider our strong side. So can you tell where to start and what to do? Because content marketing is huge. Many topics, SEO, social media, anything. So can you tell where to start and how to do it?
No small question. It's a big question from the beginning. Okay, cool. So the way that I go about content strategy and where you kind of go from the beginning is you are completely correct in that if all you do is copy competitors, you are at best a multiplier for their best guesses and at worst a multiplier for their worst guesses, which you don't know if what they are doing kind of publicly is actually correct. So if all you do is just competitor research, and I'm not saying you shouldn't, but if that's all you do, you're never going to find somewhere new, somewhere that you can own kind of your own unique selling point for yourself and where your audience hangs out. So for me, I like to do competitor research, but I like to do really in-depth keyword research. I know AI is going to take over the world, but right now we can still use enough keywords to understand what people are looking for. Keyword research from Google, and I like to map keyword kind of topics, hubs, clusters, whatever you want to call them, silos, to core product offers. So if you have three main products, we want three core keyword clusters that map to those products. the way that I build my content strategy and the way that I advise is always to start from the bottom of funnel and work your way up. It might be really easy to think of all of the top of funnel things, but the problem that you have then is, like, let's say you rank. One, it's going to be the hardest things that you rank for, but let's put that aside for the time being. Let's say you rank, you get traffic. Because you started at the top, you have nowhere to send those people. So you might get, let's say you do really well and you get 10,000 clicks a week, a month, whatever. If you don't have middle of funnel to keep convincing them to help people self-funnel down, you don't have bottom of funnel to give some, like, put a buy button in front of someone, your top of funnel content might rank really well, but ultimately it's terrible because you won't get any conversions. Whereas if you do bottom of funnel, your traffic levels will be lower, but you're so much closer. Those people that would find that content are so much closer to a purchase decision. So you rank that content. It's got way less competition as well, because you can rank for immediate problems that you solve via a purchase button with whatever your content is, your software, your product. And you test those pages as they rank for conversion. And whilst you test them, you then go, okay, cool, middle of funnel. Let's meet people at, they have a problem. They're probably product aware, but they're not aware of your product. They're just aware that they probably need to buy a fix for whatever their problem is. Or you need to educate them a little bit more on what their problem is and as to why they cannot solve it themselves. I love middle of funnel. Middle of funnel is where you play hard. You can mess around so much in middle of funnel. It's so good. Play hard in middle of funnel, and your top of funnel is your introductory of, like, the problem to people. So, long story short, start at the bottom.
Yeah, I got it.
But, the sales page, drop them in at the top. Once that's kind of working, then you can start playing around with repurposing of content. But that's my SEO kind of content strategy at the moment.
Yeah, very well. I want to ask about keyword research. I remember Bing in 2020, like 3 years ago, shared that keyword research will be obsolete. And that was 3 years ago. Mm-hmm. John Mueller replied to the same issue, that we still have a room for keyword research. But a few days ago, I checked out his Twitter, and he replied to this question that, yeah, you don't need to use any keyword research. It's better to think about customers, users, and mm-hmm. create content for them. Google will understand and show this content. I think, yeah, you know, keyword research is great, but what I usually see when companies open Ahrefs, Semrush, Google Keyword Planner, it doesn't matter, just any keyword research tools, they usually see high volume try to create content with topics that overwhelmed, overpriced. You know, it's hard to overcome other websites. For example, if I take the keyword SEO, I need to compete with Moz, Ahrefs, many big websites, Search Engine Land, Search Engine Journal, they have authority, trust, many things. It's hard. And that's why I think John Mueller replied to this question, because he thinks that many companies don't understand how to use it right, because they see this high volume keywords. Can you tell how to choose keywords, considering that some of them, it's hard to get them. It's hard to rank because we have competitors, they have resources, they have authority, high quality content. So any tips about that?
You're right about, I don't think people understand keyword research properly. I would agree with that. I would disagree with that keyword research is dead, like that it's not mm-hmm. needed. Primarily because the vast majority of people can't just jump into creating content with no internal buy-in for that as a campaign to run within the company, right? For marketing to run within the company. Keyword research, when it's done properly and it's prioritized well, gives you enough data for you to get good internal buy-in from whoever is signing the checks for the marketing team to actually do the job. If you don't have imagine you did ads and you were just like, oh, let's just throw some money at it and see what happens, right? You're never going to get budget for it. You're never going to get budget for writers. You're never going to get budget for guest posts, for good, like a decent strategy that kind of comes with it. If you don't have the keyword research, the data, a plan, then it just falls flat really quickly. In answer to your question of how to actually use it properly, I love the idea of a proper prioritization kind of algorithm. I have a formula that I use with my clients. In short, it is essentially working out how difficult is a keyword going to be to rank for, how many people are clicking on that keyword. So we look at clicks per search, not just search volume, whether or not people are paying to put ads on those keywords, because we still know that high CPC means it's probably reasonably bottom of funnel. And then there is, and obviously all of that data you can pull from Ahrefs, so you can at least run that part like automatically. But then on top of that, I have a manual check that is how close is this keyword, or at least from like a gut feeling, how close is this keyword to somebody buying our product? And then it's a rating out of 3 from 0. So 0 is not at all. 1 is kinda, but doesn't really make sense. 2 is our competitors do it better. And then 3 is we are the number one solution for that problem. We are uniquely positioned to solve that problem. And I think the more you kind of push into at least having some human element behind the keyword prioritization, you will get a much better output of those keywords. And the nice thing about that is if you're scoring them, you just start at the really high scoring ones and then make your way down. And that also falls into what I was saying before, in that you start at the bottom of funnel, because the keywords that have the highest score will be the most bottom of funnel keywords.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, interesting. I think priorities are very important in keyword research.
Especially. Yes. It is one of the biggest things I see as a massive problem as to why people think keyword research doesn't work, but also we'll get a list of 15,000 plus keywords from someone, right? And then have massive analysis paralysis and have no idea what to do with them.
Yeah.
Oh, where do we start? We could start anywhere, but anywhere that we start feels like we're missing out on those keywords. But if we start on those, we feel like we're missing out on those. There's no score. You have no idea where you're starting. And then they fall into this like weird little guilt spiral of, we know we should start, but it's expensive to start in the wrong place, so we don't start, which is almost nearly as expensive as starting in the wrong place by just not doing anything. And I see it happen all the time.
Yeah. I agree. Especially, you know, I remember a few clients told me they are going to create content for at least like 50,000 keywords. And I asked how many copywriters they have. They replied to me, just one writer who can write like half a day.
I hope they're one of those like Guinness World Record writers that knows how to write with both hands and feet at the same time.
Yeah. Jesus. It's better less, but quality. Yeah, and choose priorities. You mentioned about clusterization. Can you tell how to cluster a list of keywords? For example, if I have like 50,000 keywords, I need to cluster and choose priorities. Your method, how to do it.
So clustering, I think, is this buzzword when it comes to keywords. I think the main thing that you should do with keywords is group them together into, if I was to rank for this keyword, what other 10 keywords am I also likely to rank for? Because Google is just kind of looking at them as the same. So they've got pretty big SERP overlap. So if at least 6 pages that rank for your core keyword rank for something else, if you were to rank for that core keyword, you're likely to rank for everything else, right? And then the way that I cluster things is under product offers. I hate it, and I see this all the time when people, like look at Wikipedia for just think about Wikipedia. Wikipedia doesn't cluster anything. They link between articles that make sense to link between. And I've seen so many keyword and content strategies go to complete shit when they don't link pages together, because those two pages aren't in the same cluster, but you're talking about tangential shoulder problems. It makes 100% sense to link between those two things from a user's point of view. It would be beneficial to the reader. Oh, but we're not going to do it because it's not the perfect thing. No, it's dumb. It's the dumbest thing. So the I had an example of this a couple months back with a client where they had an article that was like best management software for agencies, right? Now, does that go in your software lists cluster? Does that go into a cluster for management software? Does that go into a cluster specifically for agencies? Or depending on what management software it is, what they're managing, it could be some kind of content marketing management software. It could be graphic design management software. Does it go into any of? No, it can go into all of them. It can fit into all of them. You can make links between all of those verticals as long as it makes sense. So the only way that I do my clustering as such is what is the SERP overlap? And then just how close is it to other kind of ideas? It's more like a topical clustering. And then just filling all of that out. And then if you've got gaps, make the content, make the gaps. But don't worry about not linking to other clusters because it's not the right thing to do, when in reality, that's not how people use the internet. People like clicking around. They're like, oh, you gave me a new term I've not heard before, but it's not in the right keyword. Send me over there. I want to go and find out what it is. Because if I don't continue that journey on your website, if you don't put that link in front of me, I'm going back to Google and I'm probably never coming back. You've probably lost me. I'm going to answer my question on Google. Yeah. You had your chance. Yeah. That's what annoys me about it. People overcomplicate it. It's nice to kind of see groups of keywords, but people overcomplicate it and then go, that's the only way they should be linked together. That's not how people work.
Yeah. Nice, nice, valuable. Tim, I want to ask about what to do next. I mean, like, for example, we have a list of keywords. We can choose priorities, cluster them. And what's next? Because today we have popular tools like Surfer SEO, Phrase, many other great tools. They can help to optimize content, but again, content creators can overcomplicate things to add almost all keywords that these tools can suggest. So your tips, how to do it right, how to find this balance and forget about, I don't know, like Destiny, any other things. I mean, like, I remember when I spoke with Lily Ray, she replied to this question that she stopped to analyze how many keywords she has on one page since 2011. So, like, plus 12 years. Can you tell how to add these keywords and how to do it right?
So, the way that I work is I love Surfer. I've used Surfer for, I want to say, 5 years. I think I was part of the first 200 people in their initial beta before it ever released, because I was part of one of Matt Diggity's courses. I love Surfer. I still use it to this day. It's one of my favorite tools. But using Surfer properly is a skill. And a lot of people will go, no, we need to hit 100 out of 100. It needs to be SEO. No, not even slightly. So the way that I work with Surfer and kind of all of the people that I talk to whenever I do content training is you want to hit a score on Surfer between 75 and 80, whatever that looks like. And the majority of the time, that means getting the top third of the suggested contextual keywords that it gives you to be green. And the rest of it you can play around with. And the reason why I really like doing it this way is it's enough of a benchmark for me to be happy as the SEO person, as the advisor around this, but it is not so tightly SEO'd that the writer feels like they can't write. My job is not to tell the writer how to do their job. My job is to get eyes on the writer's content. The writer is probably, and most of the time, an incredible writer. All I need to do is just, look, if you play here, it's a pretty big field. Mm-hmm. If you play in this box, we can get you on Google and I can get people looking at your content. And then once I've hit 75, I am a massive advocate of publish at 90%. So different scoring. I mean, 90% in terms of completion of content, not a score on Surfer. 90% for me is like, I want to publish when it doesn't. It feels good, but not perfect. Because if you're indexing on page 5, 6, you're not getting eyes on that content. But that's okay. That's the point. I want to see from an SEO point of view, how quickly does it move from page 6 up to page 3, page 2, maybe bottom of page 1, depending on the keyword. If it moves quickly enough, we did our job. If it moves a little bit slowly and kind of hangs around on page 2, is not kind of moving that much, we might need to go back in and tweak a couple of those scores, maybe pull it up to 82, 83, just a little bit of a tweak, add a load more internal links, that kind of stuff. So there is a flow once content goes live and it hits specific scores. But for me, like I said, I've been using Surfer for a long time, hit that 75, press publish. I don't know how Google is going to react to it until it's a live page. Mm-hmm. That's the best kind of, I guess, compromise that I've seen that makes everybody happy. I've always said whenever I talk to clients that my job when a piece of content goes live is to make the SEO person happy, me, the writer happy, and the person paying us happy. Because at the end of the day, it's their money, right? It's got a job to do at the end of the day. So yeah. As long as it does those three things and there's a plan to make those three things, those three people happy, at the end of the day, content's doing its job.
Yeah, nice. Yeah, I think, you know, if you teach the writer or even expert, you know, how to write about specific topic and you don't know about this topic like this, an expert, you know, it's not good. Totally. It's like if you are sick, you know, and can explain to the doctor how to treat you, you know. So, yeah, they're experts. They need to be creative. And I usually don't limit them with possibilities. Only one thing I changed many years ago. I never asked them to write some specific length, like 2,000 words or 1,000 words. I usually tell them, please write a copy better than we have in the top 10. So I don't care about the number of words. Even if I get such a request, I can charge like $1 per word or something like this. Yeah, I usually deny. I never cooperate with people like this because if writers have these conditions, they have, I don't know, they want to write more, you know, they can add some fluff. Mm-hmm. Nothing special. Yeah, it's better to avoid it.
I like to give a like a set of boundaries of this feels like it needs a lot of work, so it's probably going to be around about 2,500 words. We can see that the majority of content ranking is between 2,200 and 2,800, but if you get to 3,000 and it's all fire, like, keep it. And we'll see what we can do. There are so many other things you can play around with that aren't word count, that word count should never be a limiting factor, apart from when it is just not long enough. Mm-hmm. I've found there are times when it's like everything that ranks is 3,500, 4,000 words, and we've got 1,500 words. And there's just a point where you kind of look at that and you go, search intent requires longer, more in-depth, better content, really doing the topic justice. You haven't done it justice at 1,500 words. And then going in, kind of explaining that to the writer, the team, boom, 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 this is what needs to be done. The other reason I like kind of boundaries for word count is a lot of the companies that I work with have freelance writers and they need to manage budgets. Like what kind of limits do they have with various writers over the course of the month for how much they're spending? So it's nice to kind of help them with their budget side of things, but I completely agree. Like 100% saying, no, it has to be between this word count. Not the right... You have like, what is it, 200 plus variables that you can play around with for you to rank with, and you're the hill you're going to die on is word count? Come on.
Yeah. Yeah. Nice. Nah. Awesome. Okay, Tim, I want to ask about one aspect that it's hard to ignore today. That was simple and impossible tomorrow, about AI. And I cooperate with many great writers who can write for Forbes, Investopedia, many big prominent websites, and all of them, without any exception, use AI. In most cases, ChatGPT. And I usually tell them, you can use AI, but use it smart. Of course, I use a lot ChatGPT. I can edit my content. And I found if you feed AI with the right data, you can get great results. For example, we edit press releases on ChatGPT and got mentions on CNN, Forbes, big websites.
Love it. Yeah, hell yeah.
Yeah, you know, it's simple. If you collect data, good data, and ask ChatGPT, please write press release by using this data, with this expert opinion. We got this mention on CNN like a few weeks ago. After pitching these press releases. And I want to ask you how you use AI and how you can explain to writers about using AI that can help to increase the quality of content?
Great question. So I can't say much because sort of self-imposed NDAs and just other things going on. But I'm playing a pretty big part in a AI content startup. We have a lot of things going on, a lot of cool prompts and that kind of stuff. I've been using AI since it was September-ish last year, playing around with what was at the time, I think GPT-2. Can't quite remember. Oh my God, it was so bad and compared to like now. You think there's problems now, back then. A couple of months back, pulled a load of my writers into a call and just explained everything that I'm doing from an AI point of view, all of the stuff with ChatGPT, the prompts that I'm running, that kind of stuff, to help with other clients that I had, writers that I was working with, projects, those kind of things. So there were a couple of writers initially that were like, oh, Mom, I'm going to lose my job because it can write and it can't write. Just learn how to write better prompts. It's fine. It's never going to be as good as you. I think there's a point where AI should and can get us to a good kind of 80% content. And then you need the person to come in and make those tweaks and make it good and make it feel human and those kind of things. And you can get pretty close with some AI things at the moment. And I'll go over the biggest problem that I see with all AI prompting in a second. But I think the nice thing that I've seen with a lot of AI content and people, and when you get writers to use AI properly, is it doesn't take them 4, 5, 6 hours to get to the point that they enjoy, which is the kind of maybe a bit of rearranging, but playing around, a little bit of editing, tweaking bits here, making it flow nice, making it nice and skimmable and the headings all read really well and that kind of stuff. It doesn't take 5, 6 hours for them to get to that point. They can potentially get to that point in an hour, which means that the writer is a lot fresher. They're coming at the content, not hating it by this point, not trying to hit a deadline like yesterday kind of thing. And I've just seen it just feels better. The writers that I'm working with that are using AI regularly, much like enjoy their job so much more than they were, and are still producing content that they are proud of. Now, the biggest problem that I see most people do with pretty much all content, with all AI at the moment, is trying to get the AI to do the whole thing all in one go. And it's a massive problem, because that's not how we deal with problems. If I was to go to you, oh, can you write me a blog? You're not going to have one long thought about the whole blog and go, oh, cool, blog. Done, there we go, yay. It doesn't work like that. But that's how everyone's using AI. That's it. You write the chat, you write the prompt. Oh, you are an expert in plants. Write me write blog. And you read it and they go, it's okay, but it's not great. So the problem that people have that they're not doing is actually treating AI in the same way that we think about content, or that we think about problems. And it's that for any one problem, you can break it up into probably 5, 10, 20 constituent smaller problems. Now, if you could answer each of those constituent problems with the entire tokens that you have per prompt, you'll get a much better outcome. The problem that you have with that, though, is that can potentially take as long to solve those individual problems as it would if you were to just write the blog. So yeah. I think it's a bit of a balancing act at the moment. If you were to take the time to sit there and write the prompts and learn what makes good prompts for that kind of problem-solving chain, you're potentially going to be in a better place where you can reuse those prompts, link them together. But I don't know a lot of writers that have got the time to sit there and solve that and then still do the blog job at the same time. And
yeah,
it's... We'll see. Yeah, valuable. We'll see what happens. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I think, you know, my opinion, if everyone, I'm not everyone, okay, if someone has time to complain that AI can replace them, then AI will replace them. You know?
But yes, yes, I would completely agree with that.
Yeah, I think, you know, I see experts are excited about AI. Now, they play with that. That's okay if you fail for a long time, you can get great results, but you need to play to think how to adapt AI in your content creation process, because in most cases, it can help a lot to increase productivity, speed, many things. But if you complain, oh yeah, AI will replace you, because it's a revolution, yeah. You know. Yeah.
If you're in the business of content, you are, whether or not you like it, in the business of AI. Because, annoyingly, it's what AI is being used for the most at the moment, is content creation. So if that's your job, it's almost your job to get better at AI. The other thing that I would suggest is you can't complain about it if you've not played with it and learned its limitations.
Yeah.
Because if you know where its limitations are, all you need to do is flip that around from the other side, and they should become your new strengths, so that that can take over the busy work that you were doing before, and you can play in the things that the AI can't do at the moment and probably won't be able to do for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Can't complain about it if you've not played with it.
Yeah, yeah. Tim, I want to ask about SEO mistakes. You know, I made a lot of mistakes. You know, some of them are terrible mistakes. And I think I started my SEO journey with Black Hat SEO, because at that time, I didn't know anything about White Hat. I just opened the first resource that I got and bought Mobility, competitors had. I created content for search engines, and Google ranked well. Of course, things change many times. And yeah, today we think only about White Hat SEO. But anyway, can you list mistakes that companies still do in your experience, and your tips how to find another way?
Great questions. So I think the core one that I find all the time is, and this isn't so much an SEO mistake as it's more a people mistake when it comes to SEO, and it's setting expectations that you can solve SEO. Oh, we need to have better SEO. And it's like, no, you need to put content out there that is valuable, and the SEO will come with it. And we need to solve this in 3 months. Okay, you're not going to. Not unless you have a ridiculous budget. Like a ridiculous budget. Like you're putting 100K in a quarter. Especially if you're playing, if you're first starting and all of your competitors are at like mile 10 of the marathon and you're still lacing up your shoes, you better have a 100K budget in the more competitive areas. Because you're not only are you doing SEO, you need to catch up. You need to invent rocket shoes and get to where they are. And they'll be at mile 12 by the time that you get there. And those are the things that annoy me the most. Now, when it comes to the biggest mistakes, and I'm gonna miss out a load of the really obvious ones, like not putting the core keyword in the actual content that you want to rank for. Weirdly, you still have to put the keyword in the content for you to rank for that keyword. Not creating valuable, like decent length content, like that does the topic justice, like we were saying before. Not having links, those kind of things. Honestly, the thing that annoys me the most at the moment is people, companies listening to agencies. Because I've found over the last 10 years, agencies, SEO agencies, are SEO's biggest enemies.
Mm-hmm.
And they gatekeep SEO for the sake of making themselves sound really smart so they can put a big dollar figure on selling a solution to it. When in reality, if we were just a little bit more open about the process and the practice about what we were doing, everybody would just get to that goal of making better shit more often. And we'd have a lot more pages on the internet that were actually valuable and not just crap. Yeah. And from an SEO, like the SEO mistake that people make, I honestly think is them, a lot of companies paying a big agency way too early in the process to solve problems that they don't have for a lot of money. And that agency will just come in and run. And I've seen this like 100 times at this point. That agency will come in, they'll run a massive audit of the website, some big kind of technical audit that is just a spreadsheet of what looks like a foreign language to the client because they have no idea how to solve it because the agency didn't tell them how to solve it or didn't solve it themselves. They'll give them, like we said before, 15,000 keywords with no priority.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then this is the thing that hurts the most, is they'll then go and spunk the rest of the budget on backlinks, on directories, on all of these random crappy backlinks and get nothing for the client. And the client only really figures out that nothing's working 6 months in after they've spent 6 months spending 8, 9, 10, 17 grand, someone I was talking to the other week, 17 grand a month to get nothing. And it's weird how that entire strategy didn't talk about content once.
Yeah, awesome. Yeah, interesting.
That's the thing that annoys me the most. That's the thing that most people get wrong, is they treat SEO by itself. They don't solve for content. But then because they're just trying to solve SEO, they waste hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Yeah, it's a big issue. I agree. You know,
I feel like four conversations last week, literally helping people on the other side of that. At this point, I should just be like the care unit for companies that have been burnt by big agencies.
Yeah. Yeah. Most SEO budget is wasted. Yeah, it's true. Mm. And Tim, you know, I want to ask about your experience. For example, I found that I usually get much better results with clients who understand SEO. So if they know why we need to create high quality content, why we need to pay more attention to traffic value than to get more traffic, why we need to think about customer sales funnel, many things, why we need to use link building, white hat link building, and think about quality than quantity, yeah, we get results. We speak like one language, but if they don't understand, I usually tell them, take my course, learn from Lily Ray, Jeff Coyle, Mike Phillips, many great experts, you know. Mm-hmm. For example, Lily Ray shared a checklist all about EEAT, you know, great checklist, and many other things. And when they get the course, they understand how it works. If you don't like courses, go to Google, YouTube, it doesn't matter. Just get the basic, how SEO works, especially modern SEO. Let's imagine you started today from scratch without any experience, knowledge, skills. It's your first day in SEO. What will you do today to start completely from scratch?
Great question. So I wrote a post about this a couple months back on LinkedIn and just put all of the resources. If you were to start from scratch, like what I would, where I would go. I mean, the like right, if I was to do it today, first port of call is at the Ahrefs blog. The Ahrefs blog is incredible. I think the best thing about the Ahrefs blog as well is not only do they teach you great SEO, but they teach you incredible product first content marketing. You'll notice that whenever you read any of the SEO and any of the content that's on Ahrefs, is they have screenshots of their own tool solving the problem that they're teaching you about. But they will first introduce you and go, oh, this is how you solve it with free programs. But then this is how you use ours, and it's done in seconds in comparison to all of this manual effort doing it before. And it's a nice, like, us versus them, but in reality, I'm just showing you how to solve your problem. I don't care if you use our stuff or you use someone else's stuff. I'm just showing you two ways, one of them we happen to own, right? So they do an incredible job of teaching you not what is just SEO, but what kind of content you need to make for SEO to be competitive and to get conversions, to actually do the thing it's supposed to do in the long run. Backlinko, I know it's owned by Semrush now, but Backlinko was like my go-to. It should be everyone's go-to. I swear I just end up falling into that blog once a month at some point, and just incredible blog. Anything Brian Dean touches is incredible. The Semrush blog, I love it. I'm pretty much a diehard Ahrefs guy, but I love Semrush. Semrush is still great. They have an incredible blog. Who else is content hackers? I would look at Julia McCoy's stuff on copy hackers. Incredible stuff. All of the stuff that she's doing with her AI content, incredible. Massive advocate of get AI, use AI to get you to the point where the human then can take over. Love her stuff. And then who else? Matt Diggity. Just look at just watch his YouTube channel. Matt Diggity for how to use SEO for yourself, how to just great SEO news. More of the thing I really love about Matt Diggity stuff is he's a great translator for, oh, all of this shit is going down in the SEO world. What do we care about? For the people who are actually doing SEO and making money with it and running a business, what do you care about? What's just noise? And then go and get you a WordPress installation, $7 a month, whatever it is. Make a site, write some content, put GA4 on there now, but right is what we've got. Put Google Analytics on there, get Search Console, put some things on a website, write some stuff on a page and see what happens. Just start, just put things on a page and play around. It doesn't mean anything. Like those $7 that you pay every month for hosting or whatever it is, you'll learn so much more doing that than all of the free stuff than you would buying any $2,000 course. And I know I've spent probably in excess of $50,000, $60,000 on courses over the last 6-7 years. Yeah. some of them were okay.
Yeah, it's a lot. Yeah,
but it's a fast moving industry. Like,
yeah,
you have to. If I don't continuously learn for myself, if if I'm just even like 3 or 4 weeks and I miss it because I've got other things going on, I feel like I'm out of pocket. Like, I don't know what I'm talking about anymore. The industry, like, imagine the us this time last year talking about AI content. People would, what? Jarvis, you're using what? No, what was it? Yeah, because it was Jarvis back then, wasn't it? Not Jasper, which it is now, or Copy AI. People like, what? Oh, you're actually using it? Is it any good? Whereas now it's like you just said, all of my writers use it. We use it for a press release. I got into Forbes. I got into CNN with the AI content. You're like, the world are we living in now versus 12 months ago? It moves quickly.
Yeah. I agree. Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think, yeah. And I like that you mentioned it's better to practice, you know, to create website. Yeah. Of course, yeah, you can learn from great experts, resources, Ahrefs, Semrush, Moz, great influencers, but you need to make your hands dirty, you know, register website and do it. Yeah, it's like, think, for example, yeah, you know, I like to...
For example,
you know, great sportsmen usually train a lot.
Yes.
Don't learn how to play soccer. For example, Cristiano Ronaldo prefers to hit a ball 1,000 times a day than to read a new book how to play soccer.
Yeah.
You know, it's the same with SEO. You need, you know, I don't like to overlearn. You know, we have no time to read a teeny percent of new content that come in every single day. You know, I want to read many books, but I have no time to read all these books. Many of them are great. I want to read all articles, listen to all podcasts. And I remember one listener asked me, if I listen all your episodes, can I become a great marketer? I replied, no, you can't. It's not like how many episodes you can listen. No, I can do
That's
it.
Funny.
You know? Yeah, but just choose specific episodes. Choose topics that you like. Specialists, learn from them and start doing something, not to overlearning.
Exactly. Yeah. It's one of the reasons why I've kind of taken a big part in a software company, is because I'm doing that for clients. Like, obviously I'm running the marketing side of that company, which I do for clients, but like, I want to be way closer to it. I want to know what it's like from the inside, like really running the day-to-day, what does it look like to have all of that in place so I can be a better advisor, a better consultant for similar clients. There was a wonderful, I was on a workshop by Jay Akunzo a couple months back, and he said this wonderful, wonderful thing, which was marketers are the only people that when they write, when they do something, it's as if they're playing in the Super Bowl every time, right? It's like, it's do or die regardless. Marketers don't have a thing that is just practice the craft.
Yeah.
So I think for a lot of people, if you're writing, it was one of the reasons why I started on LinkedIn. I was like, okay, cool. I want to get better at this, but I'm not doing it for anyone else. I want to just see what it's like for me. Like, let's just write. Let's write daily. Let's publish something daily. Let's be a better writer. Let's learn how to make nice content, things that people like. Let's talk to an audience. Let's get audience insights. Let's run those conversations, because I wanted to get better at them. And the best way to do it wasn't for me to sit there and read 20 carousels by your favorite LinkedIn influencer telling you how to be better at LinkedIn. It was, no, publish 500 posts in the last year. There's another quote by Mark Manson, which is, how do you become a great writer? And he goes, ask me again after you've published 1,000,000 words.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And great book authors usually write every single day. Without any excuses, they don't skip any day because of party, because of any other things that can appeal in their lives. They write. If you write a lot, you can be consistent. You can increase the quality of your writing.
Exactly. That I was reading today, I think it's Ryan Holiday, the guy that writes all of the Stoicism books. He has a rule, which is 2 shitty pages a day. Doesn't matter what the output is, 2 shitty pages a day. Just write, get better at it. You edit it later. Writing and editing are 2 separate skills. I learned that from John Harrison, a great friend of mine, one of the best copywriters that I know. And but he was like, they're 2 separate people. Write, she, edit. They're skills. They're 2 separate skills. And it's, but you can't edit unless you've got something, you've written something in the first place.
But it's interesting. It concerns anything, you know, even video content. No, I remember I got the same advice from Mr. Beast when I watched his interview. He told you need to film 100 bad videos. Just film 100 bad videos because you can't be perfect in the first second. Even after 100 videos, you can't be perfect. But you can improve step by step. He explained, for example, after filming 10 videos, you can think, okay, I can improve my editing, I can improve my speaking, I can improve my introduction. Just do it every single step, you know, so you can learn from that. So,
any content. I couldn't agree more.
And Tim, I have my final question about the future of SEO. I want to ask you, take your crystal ball and tell what kind of future will be, because we still have the question, is SEO dead, you know, many similar things. So we have AI, probably augmented reality will change something as well, because Apple is going to launch this headset, I don't know. So Facebook failed to create this virtual reality. But anyway, technologies are coming fast, and you mentioned about that SEO is changing. So can you tell what kind of future will be and how to adapt today to this possible future?
Oh, I mean, if I give that away, like those are my secrets. imagine if you actually knew the answer to that question, and it was just, you just said it deadpan. This is what the future is going to be like. I don't know. Like we said, it changes so quickly. There's so much stuff can like going on. I think in the immediate future, with the rise of like generative search in Google, ChatGPT, those kind of things, anything that is just single depth queries, just give up on. If it's something that you can put into Google, into ChatGPT, into Bard, into whatever, and you just get an answer, don't even bother. There's no point. The thing that I'm focusing on the most at the moment with clients and my own work is, and it was really interesting, if you go back and watch the Bard introduction when Google did the I.O. earlier this year, there is this underlying kind of flavor behind all of their examples that is all firsthand experience from real people. And the crazy thing about that is, it's the one thing that AI can't do because it's not firsthand and it's not a person. It's not a people. It can't go out to the Rockies and like can't go skiing. It can't go and have a walk around like the park with its kids and go, oh, we really like that one because it's a nice half an hour walk with the pram and there are ducks and it's a nice sunny day and there's a lot of benches which I need to sit down on because my kid, right? It can't do that. It can only synthesize those ideas into something. It needs those ideas in the first place. So I think regardless of whatever happens, people want to hear from people like this. Like I'm not having a conversation with Unmissed GPT, am I right now? Like it's me and you. People like having conversations with people. They like hearing from people because there's this weird thing called empathy. And we like knowing other people's experiences. So if you can push further into that and have a way to, I've gotten some of my clients at the moment to start creating libraries of all of the firsthand experiences of all of the staff that have got anything to do with the content that they have, so that in the future we can pull from it and tease it out and pull it into content as we go further. Now, that might be an AI thing in the future, but it still needs that core library in the first place. I just think that's the right direction to go. A shared kind of library where we just talk about the things that make us human, that weirdly enough is quite impactful and interesting to other humans.
Yeah. Awesome. Love it. And I want to ask my, my wife is want us asking something else. But anyway, what I usually see that, for example, marketers on TV and radio didn't lose their jobs. They adapted to digital. So, and I like advice from Gary Vee. And he told that it doesn't matter what happens. You need to move fast. You need to adapt to new technologies. And if augmented reality will come, virtual reality, any other reality, if you have experience in SEO, you know how to create high quality content. You know how to learn users. You can adapt to any other field because you have this experience. SEO doesn't teach how to rank your website high on Google. SEO teaches how to create high quality content, how to to learn your customers, many things, how to increase website speed. It works in any reality. So, you can adapt to any other environment. Tim, it's a big pleasure to get my show, to learn from you. I like all your valuable insights. Thank our audience the best way how to keep learning from you, how to reach out to you, how to follow you.
Come find me on LinkedIn. I'm on there a lot, far more than I would care to admit, and it's a lot. Username is just T.I. Hansen. Just search for Tim Hansen. I'm the one with the big face and big text on all of my carousels. Like, that's me, hey. Or come find me at writtenout530.com is my website. If you want me to help you out with things, let's chat. I'm always down to hang out with things. Also, here's my fun thing for you. If you reach out to me on LinkedIn and you tell me why my company is called 530, I will give you a free half an hour advising call on whatever you want. I don't care. Tell me why it's called 530. There's a very specific reason. If you know, it's quite obvious. Until that point, it's not. It's been a pleasure. I've loved this. Thank you so much for having me on.
Nice, nice, guys. You can find all the links in the description below. Listen to us on Apple, Google, Spotify. Thanks again for your time. Love it. So valuable. Welcome back anytime to share more value. I follow you on LinkedIn because I need this high quality content. I need great tips. And I recommend to anyone to follow Tim on LinkedIn. You can find website. And please reply to this question, why the company is called like this. Okay, guys, love you. See you.
Thanks for listening to this entire podcast. Please rank your experience in Apple, Spotify, Google, or any other platforms that you may use. Also, please share your ranking mark on chat at seotools.tv to get a special gift. We'll see you soon on other valuable audio podcasts.